Okay, so we are doing Daf Yud today, Maseches Chagiga. We are on Tes Amud Beis, about 7 or 8 lines from the bottom. We are discussing things that are broken and cannot be fixed. So if you remember, we said that one of the opinions was that something that's broken and can't be fixed is a person who produces a mamzer. Because as much tshuva as you can do, the kid is still going to walk around for the rest of his life as a mamzer. And so there's nothing really you can do about that. So the Gemara over here, again, 8 lines from the bottom on Tesla Biz, says, holid in, lo holid lo. Now clearly, like we pointed out last time, in order to produce a mamzer, you have to have a relationship that's an isser karis. So that relationship itself was very bad. But apparently it's only the production of the mamzer that's unfixable. So the Gemara makes a deal. Holid in. Apparently it's only unfixable if you produce a mamzer. But lo holid lo. If you don't produce a child, then apparently it doesn't matter what relationship you have, that is fixable. Is that true?
You don't get karis if you have...
No, we're talking about fixable, meaning something that you can do tshuva for. Without the avira lingering, no matter what you do. V'ha tanya b'shimu nasya omer, goniv adam efshesh yachzer ganva, v'yatakin. If a person steals privately, he can always return the object, make up for it. Gozel adam efshar shiachser gozlo v'yatakin. If a person steals out in the open, again, he can always return the object and do tshuva, and now everything's fair and square. Aval haba al ish es ish. If a person commits adultery with a married woman, the asra lebayla. We know the halacha is that now she, let's say you're the third party. So you had bia with a married woman. She now is usher to her husband forever. Nitra mina olam b'halachlo. That can never be undone. So how come the Mishnah says the only type of relationship that's unfixable is if a mamzer is produced? What about simple adultery with a married woman? Because that's unfixable also. Because that act actually answers her from her husband. And that can never be undone, no matter what tshuva you do. So isn't that unfixable? Now, parenthetically, the Gemara says, Rav Shimon ben Yochai Omer, which we saw in the Mishnah already, he learned that that's not really what it means, something's broken and can't be fixed. Something to be broken, it means it was once not broken. So he says, Bikro Gamal, Bikro Chazer, Ein Omer Bikro Gamal, Bikro Chazer. You can't try to bring a karbon of a camel or a pig. We don't say that's a broken karbon, because broken implies it was once okay. That's not even close to what a carbon should be. Ela bikrotella. No, a carbon that would be broken would be, you had a sheep, and then that sheep got a psul. So therefore, v'izeh, so what would be an example of a broken thing that's unfixable? It has to be something that was once proper. Zet tamun chacham shapirish min haTorah. Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish omer, kol tamun chacham shapirish min haTorah, alav akasiv omer, kitzipor nodedes min kana. Like a bird that leaves the nest, Cain ish no did mim komo. He left his place. The Omer mamatz avoseichem be all kirach gumela. You distance yourself from me. So that was a parenthetical. Now the Marash over here points out, interestingly, he explains that this is why a metzora, someone who speaks lashon hara and gets tzaras, has to be quarantined. Speaking of quarantine, so he has to bring one of his karbanos. He brings is a bird. Shnei b'nei Yonah. Why? So the Gemara over there says, because he was chirping Lashon Hara, just gossiping. So we bring a karbon to rectify that chirping. So over here, the Marsha says, it's very similar because we also refer to the banter between chavrusas as chirping in a positive sense. So over here, it's referring to the Talmud Chacham who went off the derech kaviyachol as a chirper in the wrong direction. Meaning we make an analogy to a bird leaving the nest because this Talmud Chacham was chirping the Beis Medrash. Now he left, now he's chirping at the bar. So it's the same chirping, just for the wrong reason. So you're supposed to chirp. You're supposed to just chirp with good things. So bottom line is, we have a question mark here. What's the question? The question is, our Mishnah seems to tell us that the only relationship, a raya's relationship that's unfixable, is production of a mamzer, because the kid's walking around. But what about sleeping with an ish's ish? That's also unfixable, because she will always be usher to her husband. Says Gemara, lo kasha, kan ba chus upnuya, kan ba ish's ish. You're right. Two different cases. our Mishnah, when it said the production of a mamzer, that was talking about a person who slept with his sister. So there's no husband involved. It's an iser karis. So if they have a child, that's a mamzer. But there could be a case that's unfixable if a person, even without the production of a mamzer, meaning a person who sleeps with a married woman. So it's saying that the both are true. It just depends on the scenario. You could have a relationship that's unfixable sleeping with a married woman, or alternatively, sleeping with a sister, production of a mamzer. Either one of those is unfixable. Both are options. Our Mishnah just was happened to be discussing only the case of a sister, and that's why it discussed production of a mamzer.
Man, I'm missing some. He's saying that with the sister can be repaired if there's no child.
Correct. That's our Mishnah, who said the production of a mamzer is unfixable. That's because by the sister it has to be. Without the mamzer, it would be fixable. But the case that our Gemara is discussing here is a married woman, that's unfixable regardless of the production of children. That's one answer. Says the Gemara, Yubayisema, Hava Haba Ishishish. Really, even our Mishnah is referring to a married woman. So why is the production of a mamzer necessary? Isn't it unfixable on his face? Velokasha, Kan Ba'onis. We know that it's not always true that every act of bia with a married woman assers her to her husband. If a married woman is raped, she is not assers her husband. And therefore, our Mishnah, which requires the production of a mamzer to make it unfixable, is talking about where the married woman was raped. In that situation, she's not assers to her husband. So that is fixable. The only thing that's unfixable is the production of a mamzer. Whereas our Gemara, which said that the act itself of adultery with a married woman is unfixable, that was talking about where it was beratzel. It was a willing relationship, in which case the act itself causes that wife and the husband's relationship to be unfixable. Bibayisema, or a third possibility, is haba haba onis. Really, both cases are rape. Well, both cases are rape, then why is the relationship severed? I thought the married woman's not usher to her husband if she's raped. Well, kasha. Kan be'ishis Kohen, kan be'ishis Yisrael. Unfortunately, and this is like the saddest thing you could think of, but if the wife of a Kohen is raped, that actually she can't be with her husband, sad circumstance, and therefore that would be a situation, even be'onis, where that's unfixable on its face, whereas if a regular Yisrael woman is raped, then it would only be unfixable if they produced a mamzer. So once we're talking about this, the Gemara says, L'yotzei v'lovo in shalom. So we said, just like we said, the Talmud Chacham, once he leaves the Derech, essentially, he's off the path. We have a pasuk in Zechariah which says that when one goes and one comes, there's no shalom. So what's this referring to? So Amar Rav, Kivon Shiotze Adam Midvar Halacha Dvar Mikra Shuv Ein Lo Shalom. If you leave Halacha and go to Chumash, there's no shalom. Rashi explains why. Because if you think you're going to be able to learn any type of halacha from reading the parsha of the week, you're kidding yourself. We know that the parsha, then we have Torah Shavah Peh, and that we have Mishnah's Gemara. So if you learn halacha, you knew what to do. And now you leave that to just learn chumash. A person who just learned chumash without anything else, it's very hard to be a practicing Jew from that. Shmuel Amar, Zeh Porsh Mi Talmud LeMishnah. Says not only that, a person who says, you know what, I'll just do Mishnayos. You know, enough Daf Yomi, enough Daf Shavua, just the Mishnayos. That's also no good, because as we know, there are many Mishnayos, when you read them, they sound like one thing, and the Gemara completely interprets them differently. So just learning Mishnayos itself, it's nice, it's good to have foundation, but without the Gemara, the Mishnayos really are very unclear. Rav Yochanan Amar, Afilu Mishas L'Shas. Even going from Talmud Yerushalmi to Talmud Bavli, as Talmud Yerushalmi is a little bit deeper, so you're leaving a deeper limud. Although Toso says, going in either direction is bad. Meaning you really have to have both. I mean, nowadays, learning Yerushalmi is a little bit out of style, but at least they each offer certain qualities that the other one doesn't. So you shouldn't just leave one and pursue the other. Both of them are very necessary to get a full experience of the learning. Okay, we're up to the next Mishnah. So this Mishnah is actually almost not at all going to be a little breath of fresh air from Chagiga. It mentions Chagiga, we'll talk about it for a couple of lines, but because it mentions the Chagiga, it's going to be talking about many other topics, which are actually very interesting. So the first thing the Mishnah says is, Heter Nedarim Porchin Ba'avir Ve'en Lehem Amal Shiyas Nechos. So everyone knows what Hatar Sedarim is, right? We do it before Hashanah, do it before Yom Kippur, which means that a person makes a neder, I swear I'm going to do something, so I'm not going to do something, and then he realizes that he couldn't do it. As an example, I had someone in my shir in Smich NYU who he had gotten married and had a child very soon thereafter, and he had accepted upon himself to only eat and drink Chol of Yisrael. And then he had a child, and he sort of realized that Chalav Yisrael, when it comes to formula, his wife was in nursing, was very complicated, he couldn't get it, and he sort of, him and his wife discussed, they realized that if he would have known this would have been difficult, he was doing it as his own chumra, but now for his child to have a chumra like that, so we actually, I was in Rav Mordechai Willig Shli to share at the time, and we actually convened the Beis Din, me, Rav Willig, and someone else, and he told us that, you know, to Rav Willig, that he, you know, this is the reason, if he would have known, he never would have done it, and we said, mutulach, 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 it's not just for Yom Kippur, you could always do this. So this is really, there's a concept, even Halacha L'maaseh nowadays, called Heter Nedarim, but the Mishnah is saying it's Porchin Ba'avir, it's like flying in the air. I mean, there's very little halachos about it. Ve'in lehem amash yismichu. So we have a knowledge of what it is, but the foundation, the base of halacha that support what the concept that we know is lacking. And the Gemara is going to explain what that means. Similarly, Hilchos Shabbos, Chagigos, which is why this mission is here, the Hameilos, again, Hilchos Shabbos, we know what that is. Chagigos means the carbon chagiga. And Meilos, we know what Meila is. Meila is when I inadvertently use something that's hektish for a mundane purpose. So for example, let's say I designated an animal for a carbon, and then without realizing, I just wrote it to Shul, I wrote it to the marketplace, not realizing that was the one that I designated. Or I have a pile of money, and some of the money is hektish, some of the money is chulin, and I by accident took the hektish money and used that to buy milk at the store. It's just that money is not meant for mundane things, it's meant to be brought to Beis HaMikdash. Only by accident, only by shogi. So all these three cases of Shabbos, Chagigos, and Meilos, Harehin keharin hatzluyim b'sa'ara. It's like a mountain hanging by a little hair. Meaning, shehein mikra muat, there's very little text in the Torah discussing these things. The halachos merubos, we know Hilchos Shabbos, Me'ilos, these are vast bodies of halacha, but yet very little mention of them in the Torah. Again, the Gemara will elaborate on this. And the third category is hadinin. Dinin means just din, like in Beis Din. The ha'avodos, referring to how you bring a karbon, taharos and tmeos, and arayos, all those categories, yesh lehem amash yizichu, those seem to have a strong foundation. And then the last line is vehein hein gufei Torah. And they are the essence of the Torah. So, again, this is another...
Is it the second category, or is it talking about both categories?
That's a machlokes in the Gemara. Well, this actually supports the line we just had before the Mishnah, which is that you can't go from Gemara to Mishnah, because if you read this Mishnah, it's very unclear what it means. The Gemara really, each line is going to step by step dissect what the Gemara means. So now, the first thing we said in the Mishnah is that the concept of Hatars Nedarim has a little bit what we can rely on, but it's really not much. So we're going to quote four opinions of the source of Hataras Nedarim, and all four sources are very backhanded. It's not explicit at all, which is really what the Mishnah means, that, you know, the Torah never says, you could do Hataras Nedarim. You have to sort of figure out what that means, and we'll interpret that. So we're going to quote four opinions. Tanya, Rilezer, Omer, Yeshama, Yamash, Yismechu, what does it mean that Hataras Nedarim has what to rely on? Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Kiyafli, Kiyafli, Shtei Pamim. So, in one situation, it's referring to just Stam and Ned there. The word Yafli means just to speak. Literally, it just means to talk, to have words come out of your mouth. So, it says that once in regards to Nedarim, and once in regards to Erechin. We all know what Erechin is. Erechin is when a person vows to give his value to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Torah sets values depending on your age, depending on your gender. So, it says Yafli in both contexts. Why? Why does it say hafla in both contexts? Says the Gemara, achas hafla le'eser. In one instance, it's referring to me being permitted to take a vow, to aser something on myself. The achas hafla le'heter. And on the flip side, one time it says hafla to tell me that I'm allowed to reverse the process and say, I didn't mean that, I would never have done that. And now I'm looking to get out of the nether I made. So you see over there, the fact is hafla'a twice. One of them is a little bit excess. It's coming to teach us the concept of hataras nedarim. And now, don't be alarmed. Soon in the Gemara is going to actually attack each of these opinions. So if you're thinking of a question, the Gemara might ask your question. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Yesh lama mash yismichu, Shenemar, Asher nishpati ba'api. It might sound familiar from Friday Night Davening. Asher nishpati ba'api. So God says, I swear in my anger. So, what do you learn from that? Ba'api nishpati v'chazarti. It sounds like God made a swear, a vow, in anger. Implication being that since it was in anger, there's a way to get out of it. You know, I didn't really mean that. So you see the fact that we freeze God's vow as if he did it with anger implies there are ways to sort of say, oh, you know what? I was angry when I said that. I shouldn't have done that. And therefore, there's ways to get out of it. Now, this is interesting because is this true halacha l'maisa? Can a person use anger as a reason he doesn't have to do something? For example, can a person give a get to his wife and then come to Beis Din and say, no, I was just really angry at her. I didn't mean to do it. Can a person do that? The Raman Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat paskins that if a person, let's say you lend a person money and then the person's bothering you and you just say, you know what, forget it. You don't have to pay me. The next day when you say, I didn't mean that, you're just bothering me, apparently that using the fact that I was angry is not a good, it's not a good way out. So it could be anger is not really an excuse, although there's Gemara in Bava Basra which talks about something called a get in the kusher, which is apparently there were Kohanim, they're very fiery in both directions. So we know Kohanim, the Gemara says they're Zrizin, they're very quick, they're Zoriz, they're really amazing at Avodas Hashem, but they're also fiery in the other direction. And so apparently the Kohanim, when they got angry, they would always divorce their wives very quickly. And Chacham saw that they don't really mean this. They instituted a type of get that was for the Kohanim that basically put that as a caveat that, okay, this might go back. But what do you see from that? You see from that apparently if they didn't institute that, you couldn't reverse it. Apparently doing something in anger is valid. So over here, the Gemara seems to imply that doing something in anger is valid, and this is, I think, the middle ground in this topic. That does doing something in anger work or not? I think what we see from the Gemara over here, the answer is yes, but if in certain situations, if you can have a Pesach as a way out, it works. So for example, giving a get, we don't find the concept of saying, oh, well, unless you're under duress, that's obviously a different case, but there's no concept built into the halachos of Gittin, which says, a Pesach. Well, if I would have known she would have won the lottery the day after I gave it to her, I would never have divorced her. We don't find the concept like that. But when it comes to Nedarim, we specifically find a whole category called Pesach, which means that if I would have known, I would have never made the Neder. So their anger could actually be a reason not to. Meaning a person goes to the rabbi and says, okay, when I made that neder, I was just really fired up, and if the rabbi could say to you, well, if you would not have been angry, would you have ever made this neder? He says, absolutely not. That might be a good reason to get out of a neder. Why? Not because anger and all halachos gets you out of things, but because by nedarim there's a specific structure built in called Pesach. Pesach means, if I would have known, I would never have done this for whatever reason. One reason could be I was doing it with rage. So over here, we're saying that we're made medayik and that Hashem sweared with rage. Implication, not that the swear wasn't valid at the time, but that swear can be annulled and reneged later on through a Pesach saying, I only swore because I was angry. So, but what do you see from that pasuk? That there's a concept of getting out of a neder, and that's Hatar Sadar. That's source number two. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, Yesh Amal Mashki Yismuchu, Shenemar, Kol Nidiv Libo, anyone who is generous of heart. So what does this mean? So the Rashi says, we're Medai. It sounds like, let's say I made a neder, I'm going to bring $100 worth of gold to the Beis HaMikdash. And as I'm bringing it, I say, you know what? This is sentimental to me, or I brought too much. Let's just take off. Can I back out of that? So what we're saying here is, actually, yes. Because it says, kol nediv libo. It sounds like only if, when you actually give it, you still have that voluntary heart. Implication being, if in the meantime or in the middle, if I have a regret and I want to get out of it, I'm able to do that. It's only if at the end I'm still volunteering. So again, you see a concept that even though I pledge something, I can back out of it if I have regret for whatever reason. And the fourth opinion, Hananya ben Achir Bishua Omer, Yesh Lamal Mashiach, Mechu Shenemar, Nishbati Va'akaima Lishmor Mishpatei Tzidkacha. Very similar to opinion number two, that Hashem says, I swear and I will keep it, I'll keep the laws and the justice, implication being, Nishpati Va'akaima, but there might be an option that if I don't want to do it, I can get out of it. It was only Nishpati Va'akaima. And I choose to fulfill it. But if I choose that I want to get out of it, I have the concept of Atar Sadari. So now, Amr Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, Iha Vaihasam, if I was there, Amr Luhu, Didi Adifa Medidchu. Shmuel brings up a fifth opinion, as the source of Matar Sedarim, and he says this fifth opinion is actually better than the other four. Why? Because it's more simple. Shenemar, lo yachel divaro. Right? When a person makes a neder, he cannot back out. It's pretty simple. So what's the diuk? Hu eino mochel. That means when you made the nether, you yourself, you and I, you're the only person in the room, there's no mechanism for you as an individual to get out of this. However, ava achirim mochum lo, right, lo yachel devaro, you, the person who made the nether, have no mechanism to get out of it. But you can go to a basin of three people, tell them why you wouldn't have made the nether in the first place, and they can get you out of it. And that's a pretty, if you think of all the five opinions, that one is the least jump. It's the least stretch. It's almost on face value what the pasuk is referring to. So Amar Rava, lekulhu islehu pircha, lebar midishmul leislehu pircha. The first four opinions, we have a problem with all of them. But on Shmuel's, the last one, the one that we said the best, that one there's no kashas. So now we're going to go through the problem with each of the first four opinions. Di'i midrabi Eliezer, who said it's from kiyafli. No, Dilma Kedrabi Yehuda Jamar Mishum Rabbi Tarfon. Tani Rabbi Yehuda Jamar Mishum Rabbi Tarfon. Lo'olam Ein Echa Mehem Nazir. Shel Misna Nazirus Ela Lehafla'a. So what's the case over here? The case is that you have two people sitting on a bench, and a guy walks by. I'm adding this in. Let's say he has a little bit of long hair. And back then, that maybe you're a Nazir, because Nazirim couldn't cut their hair. So they're taking a bet. One guy on the bench says, I bet you he's a Nazir, so much so that I'll become a Nazir if he's a Nazir. I mean, we'll ask him afterwards, but before we ask him, if he's a Nazir, then I'm a Nazir. The other guy says, no way he's a Nazir. I'll be a Nazir if he's not a Nazir. Right? They have to be contrarians. And they go ask him, he is one or the other. So you would think, if I asked you on the street, how does that situation resolve itself? You would say, well, it's very simple. Just ask the person, and whoever was correct, that person's the Nazir, right? If the one who said, if he's a Nazir, I'm a Nazir, so if you find that he's a Nazir, then no. Says the Gemara, neither of them are Nazir. No matter what, if he's that guy's a Nazir, turns out, yes, no, doesn't matter. Why? Because that's what the Gemara says. Ein echad mehem Nazir, why? Shon nisna Nazirus el hafla. You know what hafla means? Hafla is not just a declaration. It's a confident declaration. It's not a declaration of doubt. So in order to be a Nazir, I can't say, if it rains on Tuesday, I'll be a Nazir. No, Nazir means I'm accepting upon myself Nazirus. It's a serious thing. So each of these individuals on the bench, they each did it with a stipulation. If he is, if he isn't, depending on what the outcome is, that's not an acceptance of Nazirus.
Can't have any conditions.
Yeah. Can't have conditions.
I want to be a Nazir.
And therefore, don't tell me kiyafli teaches me Atar Sundarim, because we need the word yafli one time just for itself. The second time is not excess. It's actually to teach me a halacha that when it comes to Nazirus, you need to have a yafli declaration. It has to be a confident, unwavering declaration without any tanai condition or any doubt.
Is it only for Nazirus? Is it only for Nazirus?
It's only for Nazirus. Correct. What about number two? Number two was Asher Nishbati Biapi. Dilma Hachi Kamar. Ba'api Nishbati Velo Hadrana. Meaning, what was our deal? God swore in anger, and therefore maybe he could take it back. Well, I can make the opposite deal. God swore in anger, and therefore he's never taking it back. Meaning, why is it more logical to say that when someone swears in anger, they'll renege? Maybe he swore in anger, and he means it. So that's just unclear, but it's not a good proof. Now, Tosis over here has a very interesting kasha, right? We say it's a Friday night davening, so we should probably know what it's talking about, this pasuk. What's God swearing on? Asher nishbati b'yavi im yivoo nal menuchasi.
I'm not going there, it's just
fine. Ah, okay, how do you know that? He knows the pasuk, right? It's shasi, right. So Tosis over here says, that's true, and therefore this pasuk seems to, this Gemara seems to not make sense. Because what does that mean? God swore, bi'api, in Yivon Menuchasi, that you, the Dor HaMidbar, are not going to enter Eretz Yisrael. Now, did they enter Eretz Yisrael or not? Did they?
No.
They did not, right? So now, that was God swearing in anger. Did he ever renege on that swear or no?
No.
He never reneged. So the kasha, the Tosfos ask is how did the Gemara entertain both possibilities here? We know the kasha of the pasuk. The pasuk is God swore in his anger, you're not going to be strong. Guess what? They didn't go. So the Gemara here is entertaining, or earlier entertained. Oh, maybe Maybe nishbati ba'api means, oh, the chazartavi, the hadrana. Yeah, maybe in a different world, but not in this world, because we know what the pasuk is referring to.
An exception for Yahushua and Caleb.
Yeah, but that's not who, I mean, it's a fair point, but that doesn't seem what God's referring to. He's referring to the Dor HaMidbar as a whole. So look at Tosfos, he says, B'hikshar b'nei l'chanan, v'al karcha v'akra b'hachi midras, the pasuk clearly means that God did not renege on this swear in anger. Midichsev, nishbati ba'af, ivo menuchasi, darshin amino gavidor ha-midbar, shalo bar la'aretz. So, how could the Gemara entertain that God reneged on this swear, and this is a source of Hataras Nedarim? So, the Tosfos answers, the re-answer is, that actually, it's not the only opinion as to what the Pasuk is referring to. It could be, it's referring to whether or not the Dor ha-midbar had a chelik in Olam Haba. Because apparently, the Gemara Sanhedrin has a debate whether or not the Dor HaMidbar, which again, they did a lot of Averos, but they also were Zochet Yetzias Mitzrayim, so they had a little bit of both, whether they were Zochet Olam Haba or not. So it could be what it means is, God swore in his anger, you will not get Olam Haba, and then it's a debate whether he would have done that or not. Because it could be that he did, it could be he did not. They definitely did not go into Eretz Yisrael, that's for sure. But again, you're forced to give that shot, because if you stick with the basic assumption that that pasuk is referring to Dor HaMidbar entering Eretz Yisrael, then you cannot entertain both possibilities of did God renege or didn't renege, because he did not renege on that swear in anger. It's a very interesting point of Tosfos. So now, source number. Now, what about number three? So, Ima Derbi Yitzchak. Remember, Yitzchak was the one who said source number three was Kol Nedivli Bo, right? The implication was, in the middle, if I get cold feet, I could renege. Dilmala fuki midi Shmuel. Damar Shmuel, gomar belibo, tsarech shiotzi bisfasa. Right, you would have thought that when a person's pledging a donation, that even if you're thinking of it, and this comes up all the time, right? A guy, a person's walking in shul, they ask for a pledge. In your mind, you think I'll give $100. But then to say it's a different thing, right? Or to raise your hand is a different thing. So you might have thought that when it comes to pledges, it's not enough to think it. I always have to verbalize it. However, the Hakamash Malon, Tiafagav Lohoti Bisfasov, you know what? Kol Nediv Libo? Why do I say Kol Nediv Libo? It's just Kol Nediv Sfasov. The Chiddush by the Mishkan was anyone who, in his mind, thought he's going to give this and the pledge that without verbalizing it, he was required to give it. That could be what Nediv Libo is teaching you, that even though he didn't verbalize, you would have thought he had to verbalize it. Kamash Malon Kol Nediv Libo. As long as your lev, again, I don't know halacha l'maisa if that applies to tzedakah nowadays. That's at least what when it comes to the Mishkan, that's what it was referring to. And therefore, don't tell me that a divlibo means, but I could renege, because it's there to teach me that at least at that time I was required to give my donation, even if I just thought I was going to give that donation. And number four, midechananya, which Ben Achid Rabbi Yeshua, which was asher nishbati by nishbati va'akayim l'shmor mishpatei tzikecha. Kirav Gidol, Amarav, Damar Gidol Amarav, Minayin Shanishba in Lakayim Asa Mitzvah. How do I know I can swear to do a mitzvah? Shinemar Shvati Vakayim Oshmor Mishvati Kikacha. What does it mean swear to do a mitzvah? It means, let's say for example, a person has to put on tefillin in the morning, right? A person says, I take a shvua, I take a neder, I'm going to put on tefillin every day. So, is that neder make any sense? Because that's, you didn't really do anything, you didn't change anything, you had to do it already. Mushbava Omen Nehar Sinai, as the Gemara says in several places. It's already been declared for you, this is what you have to do. But yet, the Chiddush is, that swear does have some purpose. Why? Says, Tosos, the Kaya Mitzvos, Ditzarech Lahaskir Shem Shamayim, Kedil Zruzei Nafshe. Fortunately, unfortunately, the Mitzias is that often we struggle with performing mitzvos. And when it comes, let's say it comes to dieting, when it comes to taking upon ourselves any Kabbalah, is hard. But at least back then, when you had to invoke the Shem Hashem in another, you didn't just say, I swear. You said, I swear in the name of Hashem. Which is why in Beis Din, when they were getting someone to tell the truth, they would say, do you swear in Hashem's name? Because at least back then, that was a very scary thing. Nowadays, it's almost like, it's uncommon for us to really do that. But you could imagine if that the pachad that one experienced by really doing that. So if that's the case, let's take the Tillin example. Okay, a person has to do it, but we all know it's a struggle. But if a person says, I swear in Hashem's name I'm going to put on tefillin, in a way that's pushing himself to do that. And according to this opinion, we validate that. We acknowledge that, and we allow a person to swear on top of an already existing chiyuv in order to push himself, give him additional fuel to motivate himself to fulfill this mitzvah. And therefore, that's what nishpati va'akayma means. It doesn't mean I can renege. It means nishpati va'akayma, a person is allowed to even invoke a vow in Hashem's name simply in order to motivate himself to do a mitzvah that he was already obligated to do, which is a chiddush, because you would have thought, if I have to do it, why do I get to say Hashem's name? Kamash Bola, we're allowed to do that to motivate ourselves. Elo de Shmuel, leisli pircha. Shmuel, the one who said, lo yachel devaro, right, that you can't go back on your nether, but you can go to a basin and let them go back on it. For him, there's no questions. We have no qualms with what he said. This is what people say. Tava chada pilpalta charifta. Better is one sharp pepper than a whole basket of gourds. Essentially saying you could have four opinions, which are all big tamid chachamim. They all have very valid opinions. You have one sharp Shmuel comes along and he says a pshat that's better, that trumps all the rest of them. So again, you see, it's not always quantity. Sometimes quality can override quantity. Okay, so now we're moving on to the next topic in the Mishnah, which is Hilchos Shabbos. We said Hilchos Shabbos is an example of something that's like a mountain hanging by a hair, in the sense that very little psukim, but a lot of halachos. So the Gemara says, really? I mean, I read the Torah before. It talks about Shabbos a bunch. So the Gemara says, Michtov Ksivon. What do you mean there's not a lot of psukim about Shabbos?
Not the details.
Yeah, but even the details. I mean, it alludes to the Mishkan, which we derive the halachos from. So Michtov Ksivon. It's really true. And the way Rashi puts it is, Tuva Azharos Ksive B'Shabbos. It warns us about Shabbos observance, which would then incorporate, I guess, all the halachos that are subsumed under that observance. So why does the Gemara Mishnah tell me that there's not much written about it? And why is it hanging by a hair? So Gemara says, it's referring to one very specific halacha in Hilchos Shabbos, and that halacha is a chiddush. It's something that is not explicit in the psukim. It's only known because it's basically hanging by a hair. And what halacha is that? It's a concept called melacha she'ina tzricha legufa. What is that? What's an example of that? So kederav Abba, Dam Rabbi Abba, hachofer guma b'shabbes vein sarach el la'afara pater ala. A person's digging a hole on Shabbos. Now, normally, what malacha is that? Digging a hole on Shabbos. What malacha is that? Other than just choose, get 1 of 39 chance. It's not ofe. It's bone. Yeah, exactly. Construction. It's binyan. But this is different. Normally you dig a pit because you want to build a basement, you want to put in the poles to give you foundation. Here, you actually need dirt. And so what you want is the pile of dirt that you shovel out of the hole. So you're actually putter, again, it's not advisable, it's not mutter, but you're not biting when the Lamatas Malach is on Shabbos. Kiman, Kirby Shimon, to Amr, Malacha, Shein Tich Legufa, Pater Aleha. Because it's a Malacha that, the Malacha, if you look at it, is a Malacha of Binyan. And yet, you don't want the normal result of that malacha. You want the dirt. You're putter on that. And that's an example of a halacha nechel Shabbos that is not explicit at all. It's a little bit counterintuitive. I'm doing the malacha, but because I want a different result, that's something that's a little bit hanging by a hair. Now the question really is here, what is the logic of malacha shetich legufa? So Rashi over here quotes another case that we're less familiar with, which is Gemara and Shabbos, which says that let's say a person, Lolenu, has a mace, has a deceased body, or a person dies on Shabbos in his house. So it smells, it's not only Shabbos for it to be there, so a person wants it out of his house, but there's no Eruv. So you got to carry the body out. So he does so. So normally carrying is because you want to move something from one place to the other. Here, it's a little different. You really just want to get it out of your house. Not only that, says Rashi, you would have rather if it was never there in the first place. Sometimes you move something because, okay, I have this thing here, and now I want to move it there. I want the object. I wanted it to be here initially, and now I want it to be here. By the deceased person, you would have rather it never been in your house. I wish it would have passed away, or not passed away at all, but if it passed away in someone else's house or outside, and now you're only bringing it out to sort of rectify a problem that you wish would have never happened. So according to Rashi, that's the definition a melacha sheitzich legufa. Meaning, I'm not doing this for the melacha at all. I'm really doing it because I'm just trying to get out of a situation. I wish this melacha would never have happened in the first place. So that's what Rashi says. But Tosfos, I think it's Tosfos on the top of Yudam Abayis, where we're coming up, and also Tosfos Mizrach Shabbos, he asks in that Pshat and Rashi, because we have several melachos, a lot of melachos, that's actually how you violate the melacha. For example, Soser, one of the melachos on Shabbos is destroying something. Well, is that really true? Is destroying something melacha on Shabbos? The answer is yes, if it's Soser Amenas Livnos. Meaning just going and smashing something, it's probably only Nisr Derabana. But if I destroy a house in order to build a house on top of it, that's for Doraisa of Soser. Says Tosfos, but according to Rashi, isn't that melacha shenitzu legufa? Because I wish the house would have never been there in the first place. I wish I could just build on a plot of land. Right? You know, it costs a lot of money to knock down a house. People like to buy a plot of land so you don't have to knock down a house. So according to Rashi, wouldn't Soser Amenas Livnos be an example of melacha shenitzu legufa? And yet, that's one of the melachos. So Tosfos says, which is, I think, in our minds, probably how we all viewed melacha shenitzu legufa, it very simply means that the melacha that it was meant for in the Mishkan is not how I'm doing it. So when they dug in the Mishkan, it was to plant foundation, and I'm doing it for a different purpose. Melacha, she'etzir l'gufa, guf meaning the melacha that, who's telling me what's normal? The Mishkan is telling me what's normal. And I'm doing it for a different purpose, so we pattern the melachas at the melachas of Mishkan, and over here, since I'm doing it in a different way, I'm not chayav on the highest of levels. So the Gemara wants to say over here, that when the Mishnah says Hilchos Shabbos are hanging by a hair, it's referring to the halacha melacha shenitzu legufa according to Rabbi Shimon. The implication being that Rabbi Yehuda, who's always the Bar Pukta, always argues with Rabbi Shimon, holds, which is true, that melacha shenitzu legufa is chayev. So says the Gemara, no, afilu teima Rabbi Yehuda. Really, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that in the case of digging a hole, that really you're putter. Why? Because hasam, in the case, let's say moving the dead body, so there you're metakin. There, what you're doing is a productive act. Hacha mekalkil hu. Here you're mekalkil, because when you're digging this, you're actually destroying the land that you're digging on. So we know in Hilchos Shabbos, doing something destructive usually knocks it down to a lower level. You're supposed to do something in constructive ways, and when you do it in a destructive way, now it lowers the level. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying, maybe when it comes to the dead body, I carried it out, it's a constructive act. I didn't destroy anything. When it comes to digging the hole, perhaps since I'm destroying the dirt and the land that I'm digging on, maybe that's putter, and even Rabbi Yehuda agrees it's putter. So the Gemara says, well, my kahara tuli b'sa'ara. Why is Malchus Yisigufa an example of hanging by a hair? Meaning either it says that in the Torah or it doesn't. So the Gemara answers, because Melechas Machsheves Asra Torah, and Melechas Machsheves Lo Ksiva. Why is Melechas Shenitzir Legufa Patr on Shabbos? Because we know the hallmark characteristic to make you chaya for a Melecha on Shabbos on the Raisa level, you have to intend to do the Melecha the way it's intended. Anytime you're not intending for that, you're Patr. So Melechas Shenitzir Legufa, you're doing the melacha of digging, which is binyan. But I'm not intending for that. I'm intending to get dirt. So you're not doing melechas machsheves. And says the Gemara, melechas machsheves, that concept is never explicitly referenced in the Torah. Nowhere toward does it say, you're only chayav Hilchos Shabbos if you do it with the proper intention. That's learned out from Chazal. So that's what we mean, the Hilchos Shabbos tuyim b'sa'ara. It means that the very fact that I'm chayav in melachos, when I do them intentionally, that itself, which is such a staple of how you violate a malacha, that itself is not even written in the Torah. So it's telling you something so basic, fundamental to Hilchos Shabbos is missing from the pages of the text of the Chumash. Okay? Continuing on to the next category, which is Chagigos. The Mishnah is saying Chagigos are an example that there's not a lot written about them. They're hanging by a hair. Again, the Gemara questions this. Michtav Ksivan. What do you mean? The Torah always talks about Chagigah. As Rashi points out, we've had this pasuk many times. Chagosem oso, Chag Lashem. The Torah says explicitly, go make a celebration, bring a karba Chagigah for yourself. So, lo tzricha, k'da amr le'er of papa la baye. It's going to be a shock of the tire for the next 5-10 lines. It's important to keep in mind the back and forth here. So, what did Rav Papa say to Abaye? Right. So, when I just told you that pasuk, how do we interpret that? Chagosam osor chag Hashem means go bring a carbon chagiga to Hashem on Yontif. No, maybe. How do you know it refers to zvicha, a carbon? Dilma chogu chaga kamarachmana. What does chogu chaga mean? Says Rashi, laharbos besimcha. Right? Why do you think schools call it a chagiga? Chagiga means a celebration. So maybe when the Torah says, have a chagosem so chag Hashem, it means have a mesiba. Have a pizza, have whatever you have at a chagiga, have that. Toso says, in chogo chaga, some say it actually refers to, this is the source of horror dancing. That Toso says, you know what it means chagiga? A chog is from a lashon mecholos. Means get in a circle. So why do Jews dance in a circle? Because it's chogu chaga, that the Hashem says, I'm young to dance in a circle. So that's what it means. So who says that the Torah mandates you to bring a carbon chagiga? The word chag could either mean, according to Rashi, just have a chagiga, have a mesiba. According to Tosos, it might mean dance in a circle. But either way, who says it's referring to a carbon? Says the Gemara, well, I'll prove to you it has to be referring to a carbon. Because Ela Meata, what about the following pasuk? Dechsev, v'yachoguli ba-midbar, says, go do a chagiga for me in the desert. Tachinami dechogu chagahu? What, is God telling us to dance in circles in the desert? Is God telling us to have a mesiba in the desert? Clearly, he's referring to us bringing carbonos. You'll tell me, you'll be a wise guy, and you'll say, yeah, no, Hashem wanted us to dance in circles in the midbar. V'haksiv, v'yor Moshe, gama tatitim biadenu, zvachim v'olos. In the very next pasuk, it says, God says, oh yeah, by the way, Moshe says, bring carbonos. So when it says, v'yachogu v'midbar, it seems pretty clear, it's referring to carbonos. No, not true, not a good proof, because dil mahakam rachmana, achlu v'shasu v'chogu, chaga kamai. Maybe it just means, what do you mean, zvachim v'olos? That means meat. It means, at your mesiba, serve fleshik. Hey, well, a mesiba with milk, by the way, is not a real mesiba. You can't share a mouth in that mesiba. You gotta go to fleshik, is where it's really at. In simcha l'babasar, like we've said many times. So maybe what the psukim mean is v'yachogli v'midbar. Maybe it means have a mesiba, have a chagiga. And how do you do that? With olos zvachim. Doesn't mean bring carbon chagigas. It means you do it with fleshiks. No. Los agdaita. You know how I know it has to be carbonos? It says about the carbonos in the midbar. By the way, you know that those chagigas that you're eating? Don't leave the fat of them until the morning. I mean, there's an isser lina. There's an isser to leave no sar from these carbonos. So what would that mean? When you have your mesiba and you have the tray of poppers, make sure you don't leave the poppers over in the morning. What does that mean? Of course it's referring to carbonos. If you say it means dancing in a circle or having a mesiba, tarbo lechag islay, is there fat when it comes to dancing? Because look at the pasuk says, chilev chagi, the fat of your chagi. What, the fat of your dancing? The fat of your chagiga mesiba? No, it clearly refers to the fat of your karbanos. Gemara's not done, not giving up. V'dil mahakam rachmana. Maybe it means chilev haba bizman chag. Lo yalin. Maybe it means the chilev that you will bring at the time of the chag. Meaning, it doesn't necessarily mean that this is what you're doing right now. It's just meaning, by the way, if you happen to bring a carbon, a voluntary carbon, on the regel, make sure not to leave it over. No, but that can't be. Because ala me'ata, habab is man chag hud lo yalin, hag d'koloshan akul yalin? What? That means Hashem saying, there's only an isser of nosar on Yontif. If I bring a carbon on a random Tuesday in July, then what? I'm allowed to leave it over? But the pasuk says, "Kol leilak ara boker ksiv." Every day and every night, I have this same isser of not leaving over nosar from carbonos. So it can't be that it's referring to, oh, maybe on the chag. It's clearly referring to carbonos. Dilma imeahi, last shot from the Gemara. No, maybe if I only had that pasuk of kol leilak ara boker, I would have thought that's la'asei ksiv. There's an asei to get rid and to burn of the rest of the carbon before morning. And hi lilav. And therefore, when it says v'lo yalin chilev chagiyat boker, it's not because we didn't already know there's an isra of nosa the rest of the year, but the rest of the year the pasuk is referring to an asei to burn the food. And here it's referring to a lav of don't leave it over. So is that you have an asay and a lav? Says the Gemara, no, we already have that. The lav ksiv krachrina v'lo yalim min abasar shir tizbach ba'erav yom rishon laboker. So we have a lav, we have an asay. So why would I say lo yalim if it wasn't referring to a karbon? So v'dilma lav v'lo b'shnei lav and v'asay. Maybe it's teaching you an extra lav. So you have an asay, a lav, and another lav. Ela asya midbar midbar ksiv. So therefore, the Gemara basically concluded, you're right, we're going in circles. We don't have a really strong proof that the word vayechogli chag, even though it seems pretty clear to us it's referring to a karbon, every time we try to say it's referring to a karbon, the Gemara goes back, we're like, oh, but it maybe could be referring to a masiba, maybe it's referring to dancing in circles, and therefore what we need is gzir shava. Asya midbar midbar, ksiv hacha vayechogli midbar, you should rejoice with me in the midbar, ksiv hasam, hazvachim u'mincha higashli b'midbar. There, hazvachim u'mincha clearly refers to karbanos, and it says the word b'midbar, and therefore, ma'lahal and zvachim, just like over there, it says the word midbar, and it's in the context of karbanos, afkad v'yachugli b'midbar, it's referring to karbanos. Okay, shkoyach. Now, let's answer our initial question. The Mishnah said that chagigos are something that's hanging by a hair. What exactly is hanging by a hair about it? Umay kahar nathli b'sa'ara? The answer is, the halacha of the fact that you bring a karban chagiga. Well, but I thought we just learned that from a pasuk of midbar, midbar. Gemara says, yeah, you're right. But divrei Torah, midivrei Kabbalah, lo yalfinan. Sometimes we have a rule, gzera shava, the best gzera shava you can make is when it's from a pasuk in Bamidbar to a pasuk in Shemos. Two things in the Torah. What about when you're making a gzera shava, pasuk in the Torah, to a pasuk somewhere else in Tanakh? So Chumash, really, those five books aren't created equal to the other 19 books, right? There's an elevated status of the five books of the Torah that were given to Moshe. So it's not as clear we could learn out Gzeirah Shavas from Pesukim in the Torah to Pesukim in Tanakh. Now, where was that Pasuk of Zvachim u'mincha yigashlim u'midbar? Where is that Pasuk? That's in Amos, one of the lesser known Nevi'im Ksuvim. And therefore, the Gemara is saying, you know why the Kasim Chagiga is hanging by a hair? Because the only way we really know that you bring a karban chagiga and don't just dance in circles is from a gzeirah shava, posing a Torah, posing an Amos. And who can say we really even can learn out from Amos? So because of that, the shadiness of this gzeirah shava, that's why it's only hanging by a hair. Now we said, mi'ilos. What's mi'ilo? We said when you accidentally bishogig, use something that's hektish for a mundane purpose. Gemara says again, Michtav Ksivan. We have Pesukim in the Torah that discuss the concept of Me'ilos. What does it mean, hanging by a hair? So, Amar Rabbi Bechama, Lunetzucha Ela Lichet, now in the following Mishnah, Hashliach Sha'asa Shlichuso, Bala Bayesmal. Lo Asa Shlichuso, Shliach Mal. So here's the case. A guy has a servant, he gives him money, and he says, I want you to go to the store, buy me a gallon of milk. Now, it turns out that this money he gave him was hektish money. Neither of them knew about it. Who violates the Me'ila? So, if the Shliach goes and makes the purchase, the Baal Bayis violates the Me'ila. But if the Shliach doesn't go through with it, or does something different, then the Shliach is Mal. So the Gemara says, let's analyze that first case. Okay? The Baal Bayis gives money to the Shliach, Shliach doing exactly what he's told to do, and the Baal Bayis violates the Me'ila. So the Gemara says, V'chi asa Shlichuso amai Mal. If the Shliach did his Shlichos, why does the Baal Bayis get the Me'ilah? V'chizeh chote v'zeh mischayiv, meaning, Rashi points out, in shliach v'dvar aveira. Normally, if I send you on a mission to do something that's wrong, really valid misser, if you do it, that's on you, not on me, even if I knew what I was doing, and even if I didn't know what I was doing. In this situation, it's true, the parties didn't know what they were doing, that's fine. At the end of the day, a shliach does an aveira, it's severed, the relationship is severed from the mishaleach. And so in the case of the shliach who buys the gallon of milk with the hektish money, why is the Baal Bayis the one buying the me'ila when ein shliach dvar avera? It should be the shliach who gets the avera. It should be the shliach who buys the me'ila. And therefore the Gemara says, haydu kahar t'lin b'sa'ara. But the fact that's the halacha, it's very hard to understand. That's what it means, the me'ila is hanging by a hair. In the sense that it's hard to understand. Amarava, umay kusha. Why is it problematic? Dilma, shiny me'ila, the yalfa chit mitruma. There's a gzer shava Hekish to truma and mahasam shlucha shalom kamoso. By truma we say, right, we say that someone else, your servant, can take truma on your behalf. So your shliach is basically, it's almost, he's a prism through which you send someone. Afkan shlucha shalom kamoso. Here, when you send the shliach to go to the store to buy you the gallon of milk, it's as if you are at the store buying the milk. He's just an extension of your hand, if we learn from truma. In which case, when he's buying the milk, it's like you're buying the milk. So it's very easy to understand why the Baal Bais buying them Me'ilah. Because even though normally we say in Shechvar Aveir, that's true, but by Truma and by Me'ilah, we have a special Hekish which teaches us that when a person sends a Shliach, it's merely an extension of his hand, and therefore it makes sense why the Baal Bais violates Me'ilah, even though the Shliach made the purchase. Ella Amar Rava, Lo Nitzcha Ella. No, this is what's actually confusing about Me'ilah. What? The Chedetanya. Nisgar Baal Bais, Lo Nisgar Shliach, Shliach Ma. So here you have an interesting, tweak in the scenario. Same scenario like I said before, right? Gallon of milk, sent him with the money. But here, as the Shliach is driving to the store, the Baal Bais looks on his table and realizes he gave him the wrong money. So did that change anything? The fact that the Baal Bais realizes at that moment, the Shliach never knows. No cell phones, he never finds out. So what do we say? Still the shliach buys the me'ilah. So there, says the Gemara, shliach aniya maika ovid. This poor shliach, what did he do wrong? The Baal Bais now has knowledge of hekdesh money being used to purchase milk. The shliach has absolutely no idea. And yet we're saying now the shliach buys the me'ilah. Now why? Why does shliach buy the me'ilah here? Because the Baal Bais can't buy the me'ilah. For one of two reasons.
He's aware.
Either he's aware and so what, so mazed now, in which case Me'ilah is only for Shogeg, or you could say, because now in his mind, I don't want the Shliach to do this anymore. He's basically severed the relationship himself in his mind, in which case now anything the Shliach buys is the Shliach's own mission, for either of those reasons. But either way, the Gemara points out, poor Shliach.
It sounds like a case of a get, and the guy gives it to a shliach, gives it out, then changes his mind.
Yeah, exactly. So over here we have specific, we're saying, how could the shliach be faulted here? He, a change in circumstance, without his knowledge, it must be, hayinu karan tliyim basara, that's what's hard to understand about me'ila. Amar Ravashi, no, my kusha, dilma midya havi moti maos hektish l'chulin. Says Ravashi, this is not surprising at all. Why? The entire concept of me'ila is violated by shogeg. Which means that the entire concept of Me'ilah, we have sympathy for the guy. Because it's always unintentional. So I don't feel bad for the Shliach. That's the concept of Me'ilah is violated unintentionally. So yeah, he didn't realize Baal Bais, realized that's fine. But it's not surprising that someone could violate Me'ilah without realizing it, because that's the only time you could violate Me'ilah. Elam Ravashi, third scenario. When it's Elah Chedetan, Nutzel Evan Okorosh Hektish. Let's say a person takes a stone or a beam of hekdesh, he steals it. Hareza lo ma'al. He doesn't violate me'ilah. Nisna l'chaveiro, let's say he passes on to his friend, gives him to him as a present, then hu ma'al, he violates me'ilah, the chaveiro lo ma'al. But the one who accepts the present does not. So michti, mishkol shakla. Mali hu, mali chaveiro. I don't get it. We're telling me that when the guy, let's say you have a pile of stones that's in the base of Mikdash. I take one of the stones, Gemara is saying, I don't violate me'ilah. I give it to my friend, I do buy me'ilah. What's the difference? I was stealing then and I'm stealing now. What is the difference if I took it from the pile or if I give it to the friend and pass it along? Either way, I've stolen, right? So that must be hainu karnat l'misara. That's what's so hard to understand about me'ilah, that I only violate it when I pass it on, but not when I initially take it.
Was you generating non-knowledge?
Yeah, but when I initially took it, maybe I didn't realize either. So the Gemara says, no, we didn't understand the background here. My kusha, Dilma Kedishmuel, Damar Shmuel, Hacha Begizbar, Hamisoros Lo Avni Binaski. You know what we're talking about? We're talking about the treasure of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, for him, the stones are actually in his possession. He's charged with watching and guarding those stones. So for him to take them from the pile, he's not actually done anything yet. It's not clear that he's taking it for himself, because he's actually in charge of watching them. So for him to take a stone from the pile and put it in his pocket, it's not crazy, because he's kind of in charge of them. So therefore, it's only when, if he picks it up and is holding it, that's fine, that's not weird, that's not strange, it doesn't matter in the Ela, because these are kind of in his possession anyway. Ella, it must. So he only buys meal though when he transfers it to the friend, because there he's showing, okay, now I'm really stealing it. True, but in terms of on the surface, what his action, how his actions speak louder than words, we can't determine from his initial action whether that's meal or not, because it's possible it's just it's in his possession anyway, since he's in charge of this. So Ella misefa, fourth category, bana besof beiso. Person steals a beam, a brick from Beis HaMikdash, and builds it into his house. No me'ila. Ach yidrataf teha b'shava pruta. Until he lives under that beam or that brick for enough time that the value will be a shava pruta. Says Gemara Michti. Shinu yishiniya. I don't get it. You took this brick, you built it into your house. What more do you want from me? Mali dar, mali lo dar. I mean, shouldn't the very act of taking a brick and building it into Beis HaMikdash, shouldn't that alone violate me'ila? Why do I have to live under the brick? That's what seems to be very problematic, and that's what I don't understand. Says the Gemara, Umay Kusha. Dilma Chidurav Damarav, Kigon Sheinich Al Piaruva. You know where you put the brick? You put the beam? On the sunroof. The sunroof is retractable. So just because I put it there, it's not like I hammered it in. It's lit in there. I could take it off whenever I want. Therefore, the very act of putting it there, it doesn't show my ownership and acquisition of such a brick. Therefore, idar be'in, only if I live under it, yes, lo dar be'lo. Therefore, because we've rejected all four of these, we have to figure out what is the case of chagiga, sorry, of me'ila, that's hanging by a hair. El olam kidarava, really it's like rava, which was number two. Number two was what? The case of where the shliach, where the baal bais realizes. Ay, but the kakash lof needed to have a motzi mos hektar shechulin. We asked, well, isn't the standard case of me'ila violated unintentionally? Think about it. That case, the shliach, is not the same. Why? Because hasam midiyada dekazuze dehektish yibar leyune. A regular guy who has on his dining room table two piles of money, hektish money and chulin money. When he makes a mistake, right, and when he violates it, we violate me'ila. Why? Because even though it's unintentional, do more diligence, be better, realize. But this shliach hacha miyada, there's no way he could have done better. He did everything in his power to try to figure out the situation, and at the end of the day, he was just left out to dry. And that's what's hard to understand about the concept of Mi'ila, and that's why it's hanging by a thread.